and good morning. It's Monday, December 18th, and our country is on the verge of a major tax overhaul. I'm Renee Bodley-Miller here in the KPCW studios with my co-host Doug Wells. Exciting times, Doug.
It's interesting times, I'll say. Some people think it's exciting. Some people think it's scary.
Well, we're going to talk to our first guest, Brian Basinger from Basinger CPA, about how those tax changes are going to affect everyone who's listening. It's going to affect you somehow, so stay tuned. He's also going to tell us about year-end giving and some good resolutions when it comes to charitable giving. We'll talk to him about that.
Yeah, and like it or not, it looks like it's scheduled for a vote tomorrow. So like it or not, it looks like it's going to happen. So let's find out how it impacts all of us, including those of us here in Park City. Our second guest is going to be Jason Hackney. He is a personal trainer. You may know his voice. He is a volunteer DJ here at the station as well. And the name of his show here is Hack Attack on KPCW. His business has a similar name, Hack Attack Fitness. And he brings the fitness and the gym to your house. So we're going to talk to him about that business. And then our final guest is going to be Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz, and she is a board-certified dermatologist. You know, we're lucky here in Park City. We have a lot of days of sunshine. That's the good news. We also have to be careful. It can lead to skin cancer. So we're going to talk to Dr. Stankiewicz about what we should know to keep our skin healthy. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
This is Matt Mitten, attorney with Jones Waldo, a Park City law firm. Longtime supporters of KPCW, our firm provides estate planning and other personal legal services to residents of Summit County and beyond. We are online at joneswaldo.com and 435-200-0085.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Congress is now on the verge of passing the tax cut President Trump has long promised. If all goes as planned, both the Senate and House will vote on the bill before the end of the week, possibly by tomorrow, Doug. And Mr. Trump will sign it into law before Christmas Day. He calls it a present to our country. Republicans are expected to push the legislation through without the support of a single Democrat. A lot of controversial items to this bill. And joining us on the phone right now is Brian Basinger. He's a CPA with his own shingle here in Park City and Heber City. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Renee. Morning, Doug.
So let's cut right to the chase, Brian. Who's going to see the biggest effects from this tax overhaul bill?
I mean, I think the people who are going to see the biggest effects are both investors and corporations. That's who the bill is really designed for, and the corporations themselves. And then kind of as a trickle-down is going to be the big entrepreneurs and small business owners.
And so when you say trickle-down, that's a term we've heard before. It's generally associated with Ronald Reagan and the trickle-down economics. Are there direct benefits where folks don't have to wait for the trickle-down, where they can benefit directly next year?
Well, you know, yes, some of the benefits are definitely there in terms of tax rate reduction and simplification. But I think all in all, this is a lot of complication with very little improvement for most people.
Oh, that's interesting, because the Trump administration is saying the most obvious change of this bill will be in your income. And because income tax rates will be lower, employers will take out less money from many workers' paychecks. So many Americans will see their take-home pay go up effective February. Do you think that will happen?
I don't see that happening. For corporations, their tax rate is going to decrease, and they will have more money. They will be more profitable. And so the investors in those corporations should see improved returns. But in terms of trickling down to people and economic growth, while I do see that happening to some extent, if it were self-sustained, then this would not need to be such a complicated tax bill. And you could just justify the corporate rate reduction on its own 2 feet, rather than needing to bring everyone else into the mix.
Yeah, though in a democracy, it's hard to get the Senate votes that you need if their constituents don't get a direct benefit as well, right? So they have to put some sweeteners in. I understand one of the sweeteners is the possible elimination of alternative minimum tax. Tell our audience what that is and why the elimination might be helpful to people.
Well, the alternative minimum tax is something that dates back to the 1960s. And basically, it was that the IRS was seeing that wealthy people were getting out of paying their correct portion of taxes by having a higher amount of deductions than normal. So the elimination of the alternative minimum tax, I think, is a good thing. The alternative minimum tax is a really complicated item that a lot of people don't understand, even people who are often paying for it. And so, you know, in that case, I think that the tax bill will, that's a positive element of the tax bill.
So it's a good thing because it simplifies it, or it's a good thing because people will be paying less taxes?
Well, I think, both. People will be paying fewer taxes. The wealthy who are the ones who pay the alternative minimum tax will be paying less taxes. So I guess your opinion on that, depends on where you sit on the political spectrum, I guess. But it does definitely simplify it. I think, generally speaking, we want a tax code that people understand and can plan for and can predict so that they can organize their lives and their business activities based on known quantities. And the alternative minimum tax, I think, was one of the items in our that's in the current tax code, not the new one, that people didn't really understand. So the elimination of that as a singular example, I think, is a positive thing.
So, you know, another impact for people, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but you talked about investors would benefit and corporations. Let's talk about the changes to investors. And one of the nice things that folks can do today, let's say they invested in Apple computers 18 months ago when it was $90 a share. It's now really close to $180. They used to, and let's say they had bought Apple as the stock went up. They used to be able to tell the IRS when they were selling stock, let's say they wanted to reduce their exposure to, in this case, Apple. And I just use that because it's a company we all know. If they wanted to reduce their exposure, they could tell the IRS, I'm going to sell a third of my shares, but I'm selling the shares I paid the most for. So that might have been the last shares that they bought versus the first shares at $90. And so their capital gains would have been less. It's what we call LIFO versus FIFO. I'm not an accountant, but I work in the investment world. Why is that important to people? Tell folks what they're proposing to change and why they might want to look at their investments this year and decide to do some selling this year because of those differences.
Yeah, well, what I've seen on the new tax bill is that everything is going to be FIFO. So it is first in, first out. It's whatever you paid for the first share is what your basis is going to be on the when you ultimately sell the stock. And so you need to be sure that you understand what your purchase prices are as your basis, and it might behoove you to possibly sell some of those shares this year before the end of the year if you want to be able to stipulate the basis that you pay on your capital gains rate.
Let's move on to mortgages. For all of our listeners out there who have a mortgage, how will this tax overhaul affect them?
Well, a big change on the mortgage side is that previously, or I guess currently still, if we're prior to the changes, you can deduct mortgage interest up to $1 million. And going forward, that's only going to be $750,000. So the amount of mortgage interest that's deductible may go down for people who live in high real estate value areas, such as Park City. The good news is that in the most recent form of the tax bill, the second mortgage does remain, available. So people with a second home in Park City or elsewhere will be able to continue to deduct that. But the limit has gone down from $1 million to $750,000.
And what about if you have a home equity loan?
So home equity loan, to be totally blunt with you, I'm not familiar with change there.
Gotcha. Okay. We'll try to get the answer for that for our listeners later.
And folks have heard conversations about SALT, you know, how they're eliminating SALT, which stands for state and local taxes. Right now, that's, again, I'm not an accountant. You are. but that's a deduction off their federal taxes. That's going to have a limit. Talk to us about what the current proposed limit is and maybe what folks can do this year before year end to take advantage of things before they change.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, this is one of the major year-end tax tips, is that your state and local taxes are going to be much more beneficial to you in 2017 than they will 2018 and beyond, assuming this passes. So to the extent that you can prepay any taxes by making estimated tax payments to the state or prepaying any property taxes, it would be very beneficial to you to do that before the year end here in 2 weeks.
And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sorry, Brian. Correct me if I'm wrong. Summit County does allow people to prepay their taxes, their property taxes. And if somebody were to prepay 2018's tax in 2017, would that count as a deduction for them?
So yes and yes. Summit County does allow people to prepay tax. And yes, prepaying 2018 taxes in 2017 does count as a deduction in 2017.
So if you're in the 30% tax bracket, let's say your property taxes are $10,000, what that's worth to you on the federal level would be $3,000 of deduction, and it will go away next year if you don't take advantage of it before the end of December.
Yep, I couldn't have said it more succinctly myself. That's exactly right.
Now, what about income tax, state income tax? So it's SALT stands for state and local taxes. It's not just property tax, it's also income tax. So people that have earned money in 2017, to the extent they're planning on waiting to pay that tax to the state of Utah in April, they will not get that deduction. But they can prepay that. What about, can they do anything for the income they're going to earn next year?
Well, I guess, so first of all, I just want to agree again with what you said on prepaying state income taxes. It does not necessarily make sense in this particular circumstance to wait until April to pay your state taxes. If you know you're going to have a state tax income bill due, you likely want to take a look at that right now and prepay that or pay that, you know, before the end of the year so that you can deduct your 2017 taxes, because it will not be deductible in all likelihood next year. And now, apologies, Doug, I already forgot your second question.
I was just asking, can people I believe the answer is no, but again, I'm not an accountant, you are. Can people prepay what they think they're going to owe in state income tax for 2018, for income earned in 2018? Can they make a dent on that now?
Yeah, the answer is no there. So you can prepay your 2017 tax that would otherwise be due in 2018, but your 2018 tax itself is not prepayable.
And do you have knowledge on if people wanted to prepay their property tax, if people wanted to prepay the tax they're going to owe for income earned in 2017, those two locations, how do they do that? Do you have what are you telling your clients? How, just the practicality, how do you actually prepay those?
So on tax.utah.gov, it's fairly easy to log on there and make a tax payment. You just select the tax period that you're wanting to pay for. So that one's pretty easy. For property tax, I would recommend contacting the Summit County tax assessor and making sure that any payment submitted is properly applied to the right period.
Real quick, Brian, a note for all of our listeners out there. Home equity loan interest is no longer deductible for anyone under this tax overhaul plan. So there you have it. Home equity loan interest not deductible under this plan. Let's move on to medical expenses. What happens to those under this tax overhaul bill?
So the big key with medical expenses is the elimination of the individual mandate. So we're no longer required under the new tax bill to have health insurance. Bill obviously is a good idea in almost every case. And we do anticipate seeing the overall medical premiums continue to increase. So big thing with medical expenses is that, you know, we want to make them deductible. We want to use the tax vehicles that are available to us. There are not too many significant changes under the new plan for that. So we always recommend, if possible, to do an HSA health savings account. That's the best vehicle, but there are other ones out there. If through your employer, a flex spending or a health reimbursement plan are available, those are good. Point is, premiums are always going to be deductible. And then we want to, as much as possible, make the out-of-pocket expenses deductible as well. And so we use HSAs, flex spending accounts, and HRAs in order to accomplish that.
Okay, so we're starting to use a lot of acronyms here. I'm going to toss out another one.
Accountant speak, sorry.
Yes, no, but it's important. I mean, these are the tools of the trade. Let's talk about another big category. How about charitable donations? We're a week away from Christmas. It's a week from today, actually. People want to make charitable donations. Should they be doing that this year? Is there an incentive, a bigger incentive, to wait to next year, or what's going on there?
So charitable donations, for the most part, were left alone. So charitable donations, you can make this year or next year. There's no huge rush. The thing with charitable donations is, again, it's unchanged, and the question you should be asking yourself is it the right donation to make? Is it a donation that you want to make for the right reason? So we never want to spend money, including donations, solely to save on taxes. Frankly, this year, I guess you just need to look at your specific situation and see what your projected income and tax rate is going to be in 2017 versus what you anticipate in the coming year in order to determine when it's going to best benefit you.
So, Brian, one of the tools my clients are using is what's called the Donor Advised Fund, to toss out another acronym, DAF. Tell our audience what a Donor Advised Fund is, and relative to your comment about making sure it's an organization that you want to support, what's the advantage of doing a Donor Advised Fund as far as the pacing and the identification of the ultimate charity?
So a Donor Advised Fund is basically a vehicle that is established that allows you to make charitable contributions and receive the tax benefit right now in 2017, and then distribute that money time in the future. So that's kind of a summary of what it is. What was your I apologize, I missed the follow-up question.
Yeah, I was asking, and I'll just share, what the power of the Donor Advised Fund is, and that is, you get the donation this year, but you can actually give it to the ultimate charity in 2018, 2019, yeah. 2020. So you get the tax donation this year. I should put in a plug, the Park City Community Foundation and the Utah Community Foundation both offer Donor Advised Funds. And they can also let listeners know, hey, if you have a cause that you're passionate about, they can help identify local charities that will support that. But again, the nice thing about the Donor Advised Fund is you don't have to decide ultimately where that money's going to go. It's kind of like a custodial account, but the custodial account itself is a charity, and then you're advising that charity to make the ultimate donation to one of the organizations you want to support, and you can delay that decision a year, 2 years, you can delay 10 years.
Right.
So that's the background on that. What about any changes to estate tax that this proposal is suggesting to change?
So no change to estate tax that I'm aware of. The biggest thing is just that it won't be deductible for the most part going forward. So if you live, if you live in a higher state tax place. You can just use the general terminology in the blue states. Understand that there's a theoretical offset with an increased standard deduction, practically speaking, you will lose deductions under the new tax plan.
And one of the side effects that I've been reading about is that local municipalities, state governments are going to be under more pressure to reduce the state tax, because effectively, that rate is increasing for all of us if we don't get the federal deduction. Do you think that's going to happen?
Don't see it happening. I don't have the crystal ball. I can't see exactly what's going to happen in the future. But tax rates, just generally speaking, seem to only ratchet one way. Although I guess this tax bill in some respects goes counterintuitive to that. But, you know, largely speaking, especially for local municipalities and states, once they start to bank on that revenue, it's difficult for them to ratchet back.
And for our listeners, we're talking to Brian Basinger, local CPA. We've got about 4 minutes left, Brian. Let's transition to end-of-year giving. People only have a couple of weeks left to make a donation before the end of the year. What are you advising your clients to do?
Well, similar to what we said, first of all, you want to make sure that that it is a registered charity so that you can actually get a deduction for it. And then, you know, give the way that your heart moves you to give. There are certainly other tax deductible strategies that we recommend. So giving is not the only one that comes up at end of year. But if you're looking to give money, then oftentimes it makes sense to do that before the end of the year rather than moving to it to 2018 and having to wait another full year for the tax benefit.
And we should alert our listeners, you know, with the prevalence these days of GoFundMe accounts, those are not registered charities. So if you see something that's tugging at your heartstrings, back to your point, if you really want to give, then by all means give. But they should know that the GoFundMe account is not tax deductible.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, so just giving money to a good cause, if that's an individual or you know, just kind of whatever situation, however sincere that may be, understand that that is not going to be counted as a charitable donation. So, you know, if that's the right thing to do, then of course do it. But just understand going in that you're paying full dollar amounts for those donations and those gifts, and they're not the same as giving to an actual registered charity.
And Brian, you mentioned charitable giving is one of the year-end strategies that you're talking to your clients about. We have about 2 minutes left. What are some of the other ones? I would imagine funding retirement accounts such as 401ks. What are also the big ticket items that people should know before the end of the year?
Yeah, it really, I guess, comes down to, there are a lot of things that we work mostly with entrepreneurs, and there are a lot of things that apply to entrepreneurs that don't necessarily apply to people with just regular W-2 income. But if we're looking at things that kind of apply to everybody, retirement accounts would certainly be one of them. And then just generally, shifting income and expenses as much as possible between years is the other one. But the largest thing that I would say going into year end is to get a picture of where you're at. Put together your numbers, figure out how much mortgage interest you've paid. If you're a business owner, make sure that your books are in order, and get an idea of what all the inputs are into your tax return so that you can have an idea of if it makes sense for you to do something this year, or if maybe you want to save those benefits for the future year. So the first thing is know where you are. Then second thing is see what expenses you can move or revenue income you can move from 1 year to the other.
Okay, that's great advice. You mentioned you work with entrepreneurs. Before we let you go, we have had some entrepreneurs in here telling us about their company. We have had investors in here talking to us about some of their angel investments. You know, it's a hard path. It's a risky path. 60, 70, 80% of these companies, unfortunately, do not make it. From a tax standpoint, if an investor invests in one of these startups and the company does not succeed, what do they need from the company so that they can go to the IRS and say, hey, I made this investment, it didn't work out, so it's a loss for me?
Yeah, so most of that comes, I guess, depending on the form of investment and how the company is. A lot of times it would be a K-1 statement from the company. So if a company goes out of business in a particular year, all the necessary information would be reflected on the K-1, and you should be tracking your basis, so the amount of funds that you've put into the company over time, and then ultimately you can go, and once that final return is filed, you can recognize your loss on that investment and take it as a capital loss, which will be a benefit on the tax return.
Well, Brian Basinger, thank you very much for joining us this morning on Mountain Money. If our listeners have any more questions for you, they can go to basingercpa.com. Anything else you want to add before we let you go?
No, thanks. Appreciate it, Renee and Doug, and happy holidays.
Thank you. You too. Now, stay with us on Mountain Money. If your goal for 2018 is to feel better and look better, our next two guests will help you do that. We're going to talk to Jason Hackney, a personal trainer, and Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz. She's a new dermatologist in town. Stay tuned. We'll have a Hack with us right after these messages.
Hello, this is Diane Reinhart with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. With 30 offices throughout Utah, we have been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976 and are proud supporters of KPCW. Our agents are in Summit and Wasatch counties and can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays!
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Thank you again to Brian Basinger from Basinger CPA for giving us some advice. It's kind of your end. It's rapidly approaching, next week being Christmas. So that was the financial health aspect of today's show. In studio with us now is Jason Hackney. He's a personal trainer. We're going to talk about our personal health. You may have heard Jason on the radio. Hopefully you have. His show is called The Hack Attack. And his business has a similar name. It's called The Hack Attack Fitness. Jason, welcome to Mountain Money.
What's up? Good morning. And it's amazing that people actually do get up on a Monday morning and are active and productive members of society.
Say, it's a good thing, right? You're helping them do that and have a little jump in their step.
Exactly. Well, I'm normally the Saturday night guy, so it's like, wow, this is great. So with the with me, I brought a sign here since radio is such a visual medium. But the Gymbringer, it's called. And it's all about the in-home personal training side of things, which I think is very lacking in Park City. Park City is all about the gyms, and we have wonderful gyms here. But what if you can't get to the gym? What if you don't have mobility, the time, any number of restrictions that prevent you from going to the gym? I will bring the gym to you.
Hence the gym bringer.
I wanted to have a flair, kind of like the Hack Attack show title, you know, the gym bringer, something dramatic. There's going to be all these signs on my truck. You're going to see it around town. It's a winged kettlebell is what I settled on. But basically, I have a bunch of mobile equipment. I got power block dumbbells up to 50 pounds. It's an all-in-one set. I got body bar barbells, tubing, a Swiss ball, mat, even flooring to protect your floor, like in a jigsaw puzzle pattern. So I can come into your home and prove that you don't need a full gym to get a full workout.
But how much space do you need in your house?
Literally a body length worth of space.
Oh,
so
wow.
I've been training a woman in her home for a while now. Literally, she has this very heavily furnished living room. We just move a coffee table out of the way, and it is a rectangle of rug, a rectangle of carpet, and we can do everything to her. I work her like a rented mule. Like, she gets such a great workout. That'll
get the phones ringing. You say, I'll work you out like a rented mule.
I should put that on the sign. That's what should be on there.
So who's your typical client?
A lot of at-home moms, at-home employees, basically, you know, the non-traditional sort of self-employed demographic. Also, people with mobility issues who I actually train a guy in a wheelchair who him getting around is a kind of a harder issue. So anyone from someone with a strained schedule, mobility issues, the person that just can't get it in, say they have a weird schedule or are really limited. They either have to train early in the morning, they have to train maybe even the evening. They don't have time before work, during the workday. So, and they don't want to get to a gym after a long day. That's the last thing they want to do. So the convenience of me just coming to them, it really works. And I've been sort of playing with different models, and I finally got it dialed to where I think this would be exciting to bring to the Park City community.
Hack, one of my biggest hurdles to overcome when it comes to signing up with a personal trainer is It's kind of like when you have a house cleaner and you want to clean the house before the house cleaner comes. I kind of want to get in a little bit better shape before I have the personal trainer.
Get fit before there's an actual fitness person there.
I'm sure that that is a wacko philosophy and that it's no excuse for not getting the trainer.
You are a wacko. You're right.
thank you.
Well, you touch on an important point, which is sort of there can be a lot of insecurities too. Another big reason why someone maybe doesn't want to go to the gym is what if they haven't been to a gym in their lives? What if they haven't been to a gym in 10, 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
They're embarrassed with maybe they feel insecure about how they've fallen out of shape. They don't want to be seen or judged by others. We all always we always feel that we may be judged. They're watching, they're laughing, they're thinking ill of me. The reality is no, but still that's a strong feeling in a lot of people who aren't confident and don't feel like they know what to do in a gym setting, or they've just been out of the game for a long time. And so you can have the privacy of your own home. You don't have to worry about any of that. And
there's a lot of pressure in the Park City community in particular because so many people here are fit. And someone at our holiday party on Friday night said that his doctor informed him he was overweight. And I said, are you kidding? You don't look overweight. And he said, well, I'm Park City overweight. And we all laughed because it all kind of hit close to home. We all knew what he was talking about.
8% body fat, man. You need to...
Exactly.
You need to...
Right.
Cut down.
Let's cut to the chase here. How much does it cost to get the gym bringer to your home?
40 a session, 40 an hour. Yeah.
A full hour.
You're surprised.
I actually am.
I know. So I've settled on that number because that's what I've been doing for a while now. I think that's fair. Basically, I want it to also be accessible. I don't want it to just be for the affluent or say only available to a certain demographic. I want this to be available for everyone. And to me, that's enough. To me, that's fair. You know, so I want to just be something that is approachable and friendly and doable on anybody's budget.
Yeah, you know what I like about that is there's a lot of excuses why people don't start getting into shape.
Exactly.
And when you say $40, I think for most people, it's like that's very reasonable. Mm-hmm. You know, for the cost of going out to dinner, which, you know, part of getting into shape is maybe going out to dinner one night a month less often.
Yeah.
So for the cost of doing that, you can have a professional come into your house with the gear and start working with you and helping you reach your goals. So I applaud you for that because that does sound very reasonable.
I like that. I like that. So save the $40 on dinner once a month, and or maybe more than once a month.
But ideally,
there's a lot of restaurants in town. I didn't want to say once a week.
But ideally, so you're coming to somebody's house to really help somebody get into shape. You
exactly.
want to see them how many times a week or month?
You know, depending on what you're doing on your own, you know, at least once a week would be good. But, you know, say you're very active on your own program throughout a week or you want guidance in your own program, I could make a program for you. I can design a program. You can instigate it, and we can do maybe once a week. If you're really serious and really need guidance, anywhere for 3 to 4 times a week to start off with. I always recommend it to start off with 3 full body workouts a week on like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday split. So there's a full day of recovery in between. As you reintegrate your body into exercise, you don't want to just go all out right off the couch. You know, you don't want that either. So that would be a range. I would say, what are your goals? What is your experience level? Where are you at now? But yeah, I just the number one excuse why people don't exercise is I don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's the number one statistical reason, and I want to...
Well, let's talk about that, because I think a lot of people think they need to spend 90 minutes in the gym.
Right.
So if somebody is pressed for time, what do you tell them? What's the minimum they can do to make a difference?
If you are pressed for... So there's always a way to get a full workout in. If you are pressed for time, you have to look at intensity. So one of the big tenets of training is frequency, duration, intensity. If duration is short, intensity must be high. If duration is long, intensity must be lower. So even if someone had a half hour, that's okay. I can, they will pay for that half hour. They every minute of that half hour, the intensity, shorter rest periods, the intensity of movements. That's even not an excuse. There's always a way to get something in.
So I'm a fan of working out, as are a lot of people here in town. Absolutely. And my friends are surprised. My weightlifting workout, if need be, I can get a full workout in weightlifting in 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
And I think when I tell people that, they're like, no way. But we all have, no matter how busy your day is, we all have 20 minutes in a day, which is why I do that. Now, what about, so you're training people, and I think the ultimate goal is they get the fitness bug, and then they start doing it on their own as well. What about the gym? What do people need at home? What's the minimum they need at home to get a good workout?
A floor. If you have a floor. Even if you were limited to only floor, you still have your body weight. And that's where a lot of this starts. One of the old sayings is you have to earn weight. You know, weight is earned. Until you can contend with your own body weight, some people say you don't have a right to even lift weights. That's a bit extreme, you know. But a floor, and I'm not even exaggerating. If you have an open floor, even just 5 square feet, and we can get busy.
And do you need a $2,000 treadmill at home, or will a $50 jump rope give you just as good of a
exactly.
workout?
That's an expensive jump rope.
I was going to say, what kind of
jump rope? What jump ropes are you getting?
That's a good jump rope. But
the gold gilded jump rope will do. but exactly. A floor, jump rope, even if you only have your body, burpees, mountain climbers, squat jumps, a box jump onto a coffee table, albeit a sturdy coffee table, maybe not your mother's antique coffee table from Germany or something. But there's always a way.
That's a good point, because so many people travel for their jobs, and you can give them a workout they can do in their hotel room?
Absolutely. So basically, the whole point of Gym Bringer is you do not need a full gym to get a full workout. That's the whole motto, credo, what have you.
We kind of skipped a big point in this conversation, Hack, and that's your background. How long have you been doing this?
So I've been a personal trainer for 3 years, full time. But I have a sports background. Even before then, I was still training friends, training people, doing just endless independent study. I have a team background, team sports background. So I played a bit of rugby for the U. Mm-hmm. That rugby put me in the gym because strength is safety in a game like rugby.
I was going to say rugby probably put you in the hospital a couple times too.
Yeah. It's a rough game. So we were lifting all the time. And I really took to exercise sports science like a duck to water, started studying, started training my friends, advising my friends outside of that. And that just evolved into pursuing more education, pursued a bit of athletic training courses at the U, nutrition, anatomy, kinesiology, took a lot of that, then got certified. I'm American College of Sports Medicine certified in personal training, and been doing that over 3 years now and loving it. I just love to impart fitness. I have a passion for it, and I love to impart that to people who want it as well.
So great background for it. Clearly passionate for this.
I love it.
You know, the one thing we haven't talked about is flexibility. And
As in a schedule or the actual component of fitness flexibility?
The actual component of fitness. Right.
Gotcha.
Flexibility as far as having the trainer come to your house with the gym, it doesn't get any more flexible than that.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
But, you know, Park City tends to be a place that people move to later in their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And flexibility can be a big issue. Mm-hmm. How do you help people with flexibility?
Range of motion, right? So there's an important thing in training, you know, the range of motion, training within the full range of motion. And some people don't understand what the full range of motion for any given exercise is. Sometimes, and I don't want to get too heady about it, but sometimes more isn't always better. Sometimes you want to train in a smaller range of motion to not give the muscle a break. Stretching before, stretching after, there's all sorts of drills I do. I don't like to stretch before a workout. I like to do more of a dynamic workout. There's a lot of studies that show stretching before can change the motor patterns. So say if you drop a pen on the floor, you bend down to pick it up. Did you think about the squat you just had to perform to bend down to the floor and pick it up? No, it's a trained motor pattern. It's been trained into your body your whole life. If you were to stretch and do a 5-minute warm-up before you go and pick up that pen, suddenly, yes, you have lengthened those muscle fibers temporarily, and you have changed your range of motion. That's actually how people can get injured sometimes. Is okay, I'm going to squat, so I'm going to do some marathon stretching session for 20 minutes before I ever start squatting. And yeah, that could get you maybe 2-3 inches lower into your squat. What if you're not ready for that? What if your glutes, hamstrings, hip flexors, lower back aren't ready for that? Oh, you hurt yourself. So I perform more of a dynamic warm-up that gets you ready for a certain movement pattern, and then stretching afterwards. I believe in the muscles are warm. You're done with these motions. Stretching afterwards gets more of a benefit, more of an effect, in my opinion. Again, there's two schools of thought to this, but I'm of the school of thought of dynamic warm-up and mobility drills, a ton of mobility drills, and then stretching and even more mobility drills after the fact. But that we're getting into like the exercise physiology of that. But yeah, so I can address flexibility, strength, fat loss, conditioning, cardio. I train athletes, non-athletes, kids, the seniors. I'll take all comers.
So it sounds like you can customize your workout. If you're somebody who wants more strength, if you're somebody who wants more cardio.
Exactly. I don't take a scattergun method. It's customized to you. I don't just say, hey, do a 10 curl press, and I don't care if you have a shoulder issue. Just do that.
So Hack, before we let you go, you mentioned fat loss. This is a tough time. It's a fun time of year, but it's also a tough time of year to keep your diet under control. What advice are you giving your clients to put them in a situation where they're not looking back with regret on January 2nd?
Why are all the fat loss, the fat-inducing things the funnest, right? So 'tis the season, right, of temptation. And I would say no one meal has the power to make you fat. No one meal has the power to make you lose weight. It is a cumulative effect. It is a lifestyle effect. Say, man, I'm really jonesing for some Wendy's right now. And I examine this. Will this fry and this burger make me fat? Individually and of itself, no, it can't. It's just one meal. But if I had Wendy's every day for lunch, and 2 weeks later, now we're looking at a cumulative effect. Same thing with all this holiday eating. There's chocolates. There's chips. There's pastries. Oh, the pastries. They're all over the place, right? Must you go without? No, we don't have to be. You don't have to have such Spartan reserve. You can have the pastry, right? But leave it at that. Have the pastry. Note that you have the pastry. Acknowledge it. Cry about having the pastry, whatever you do. But then maybe not have a pastry for a few days, right? Maybe give yourself an allowance per week. Like, okay, this week I'm only going to eat two pastries rather than the pastry every single day on your coffee break. So, again, it's the bigger picture. It's not meal by meal. Well, that is how you win it, champ. It's meal by meal, right? But you look at it in the broader scope of things where, okay, if in a week I have one cheat meal, take the cheat meal. It's good for you. It's good for your psyche, but don't cheat meal every day.
Keeps things in balance, right?
Yeah.
Moderation.
Moderation and balance in all things.
Great. HackAttackFitness.com is where our listeners can go.
HackAttackFitness.com. The website is up and running. You're going to see my truck around town with the signs.
Best of luck to you.
I cannot be bounded by the gym anymore. I must away to in-home training.
And we'll hear you still every other Saturday night.
That's
here on
right.
KPCW Radio.
You can't get rid of me.
Right. Thank you, Hack.
Thanks
we appreciate
so much,
you being
guys.
Here.
Appreciate
we'll be
it.
Right back with some skincare tips right after this.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain instructors share their love of skiing and snowboarding with guests, helping them improve their skills and enjoy the mountain. More information on Ski and Snowboard School and other programs at parkcitymountain.com.
Rocking around Christmas tree at the Christmas party.
Celebrate this holiday season with the world-renowned Grammy Award-winning vocalist Leanne Rimes as she presents Today is Christmas with the Utah Symphony, featuring songs such as Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree and A Holly Jolly Christmas. Leanne Rimes, Today is Christmas with the Utah Symphony December 19th at Abravanel Hall. For tickets, visit utahsymphony.org. Utah Symphony Utah Opera is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Thanks again to our very own Hack Attack, Jason Hackney, for talking to us about his personal training business. In studio with us now is Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz. She is a board-certified dermatologist. I mentioned at the top of the hour that one of the nice things about Park City, we're seeing it this morning, we get a lot of sunshine. That's also a challenge. So, Dr. Stankiewicz, thank you for joining us this morning. And tell us what we should know to protect ourselves from all this sunshine.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. It's true. With the sun comes sun damage on the skin. So first and foremost, we should be thinking about wearing sunscreen on our face 100% of the time. Even if you're just walking from your car to your work, from the car to the grocery store, because you never know when you're going to be stuck out in the elements. And so sunscreen is the number one defense to prevent against skin cancer, aging, and sun damage.
My mother always bemoans to my sister and me that our moisturizers these days, most of them have SPF in them. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, growing up, they didn't have that. So she thinks we're all going to look much younger.
I mean, sunscreen is relatively recent invention, or at least cosmetically acceptable sunscreens are a relatively recent invention. I mean, I think even in my childhood, we didn't have sunscreens like we do now. So we're at a huge advantage these days.
So in our younger years, when we slathered ourselves in iodine and baby oil and sat out in the sun, does that mean we're at a higher risk for skin cancer?
Yes. And don't feel bad. If I had a dollar for every time someone told me they slathered themselves with baby oil and iodine, I would have a private island in the Bahamas. So it was very common practice. But yes, your risk is higher for skin cancer and sun damage.
So how prevalent is skin cancer? I've heard it's the most common form of cancer. I don't know if that's true or not, but percentage-wise, in a state like Utah that gets as much sunshine as we do, what percent of our population is ultimately going to have to deal with skin cancer?
So skin cancer is by far the most common cancer in general. 1 million people a year, and it's climbing, get basal cell carcinoma, skin cancer. These don't shorten your lifespan, but they become, you know, a problem if you leave them there. And then just below that is squamous cell carcinoma, somewhere, you know, around 800,000 people a year. And then melanoma is the third most common skin cancer. Now, we don't track basal cell squamous cell carcinoma as much as we track melanoma, but Utah leads the country by far. So 40% incidence of melanoma in Utah, and it is by far the number one.
40% of the people that live in Utah will ultimately get some form of skin cancer. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's huge. That's just under half.
Mm-hmm.
So sunblock, what else should we be doing?
Sun protection doesn't just mean sunblock. So sun protective clothing, staying out of the sun, wearing hats, and planning your activities so that they're not at the height of the, you know, noon, going out in the morning or going out in the evening before 10 or after 2.
And so we're at a high altitude. We have a lot of sunny days throughout the year. But another risk factor is eye color, right? So if you have blue eyes, we have a lot of blondes and blue-eyed mm-hmm. people here in Utah. Blue eyes, green eyes? Someone told me, you know, you're automatically at risk for cancer if you have blue eyes. I didn't know that.
So
Skin cancer, excuse me.
Yeah, your hair color, your skin color, your eye color are all an indication of how much pigment you have. And you can think about, you know, pigment, natural pigment, genetically derived pigment as protection from the sun. And we all have a certain amount of sun exposure that we're allowed over our lifetime based on how much pigment we have. And then when you go over that amount of sun exposure, then you start to pay for it in skin cancer and sun damage.
You mentioned earlier that you'd have your own private island for everyone who told you they sunbathed in baby oil and iodine. You kind of have your own private island here. You just opened a lovely facility, the Dermatology House.
Yes.
What's that like?
So the Dermatology House, we're in Kimball Junction in the Silver Mountain Building, and we're a full-service dermatology clinic. So we offer everything from skin cancer screenings, treatment of acne, common skin condition, rashes, to the cosmetic side. So we have all of the state-of-the-art lasers. We do injectables, and we've curated a really lovely line of science-backed skincare products.
And you mentioned the skin cancer checks. How often should people do that? Is it covered by insurance, and what does that cost?
So it's always covered by insurance. Of course, you know, if you have a high deductible, you'll feel the cost of that. And it's different for every, you know, insurance company. But, you know, it's you know, under $200 or something like that. And it depends on your risk factors. So if you have a family history of skin cancer, if you have a history of excessive sun exposure, fair skin, and signs of sun damage like brown spots and then you should be seen once a year. If you have a history of skin cancer yourself, you should be seen once to twice a year. If you have a history of melanoma, sometimes we'll see you starting off seeing you every 3 months for a skin cancer check.
And I just want to share with our listeners your credentials. You graduated from Indiana University School of Medicine, completed your dermatology residency at Dartmouth Medical Center, and then you followed up with a clinical fellowship at Harvard Medical School in laser and cosmetic dermatology, where you learned the latest laser technologies. What are laser technologies in the world of dermatology?
So lasers allow us to remove something on the skin that we don't want and leave normal skin behind. And the technologies are always advancing, making the treatments safer and more effective. So you have to stay up with the latest to get the best results. And we have in our clinic arguably the very best laser technologies out right now. And my fellowship, I trained with the guy who invented all of basically every laser technology available in dermatology now.
So we only have a few minutes left, yeah. But I understand Utah is very lax in folks that can do skin treatments and do, I believe, even injections. We're much more lax than other states. What caution would you have? Renee just shared your credentials and the professionalism and the years of training that you have. What should people know about people that maybe are doing this but are not board certified dermatologists?
Yeah, so every state has a different law about who can, perform different procedures. And Utah is not the worst, actually. there are some states that are much more lax. But yes, it's very important to know the credentials of your injector, know the credentials of the person who's performing the treatments on you. I would caution people not to seek treatments from a non-physician unless they're under the close eye of physicians, which usually is not the case. So
it's scary when you hear about women now going, like, eyebrows are a big thing, and they go to get the microblading done for their eyebrows. And I just think, you're letting somebody cut into your skin, and do you know who that person is and what kind of training they have? Yeah. You can't be too careful when it comes to your face, right?
You can't be too careful. There are a lot, side effects that are permanent and significant, especially with injections. You can inject filler into a vessel. It can cause blindness. It can cause your skin to die in a certain area. So these are not, obviously things that should be taken lightly. As far as lasers go, it's very easy to create a burn on the skin and create scars. And as a physician trained in laser and cosmetic dermatology, I tend to see those side effects. And so, I think it's a good point to bring caution.
Well, Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz, you're with the Dermatology House, just opened this fall, yeah?
Yes.
How's business been going?
It's great. People in Park City are wonderful. They care about their health and they care about beauty and, keeping their skin looking good. So, and everyone's been very nice and down to earth. So
number one recommendation, wear your sunscreen, yeah?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz, we appreciate having you here on Mountain Money. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. That was a great show, as always. We want to thank our great sponsors. We couldn't have guests like this come in, and we couldn't do a show like this without our sponsors. They include Mountain West Bank, Vicasa, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Properties with Viridian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties.
And thank you to our fabulous guests this morning. We started off the hour with Brian Basinger, CPA. You can get more information on his services at BasingerCPA.com, excuse me. Then Jason Hackney, we know him as Hack Attack here, our Saturday night DJ. He has a personal training business called The Gym Bringer. He brings the gym to you. More information on that at HackAttackFitness.com. And then thank you to Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz. She was just here with us, has just opened the Dermatology House that's over there in Kimball Junction. want to thank all of those guests. And Doug, it's going to be an interesting week with this tax overhaul bill.
It's going to be an interesting week. We're at the end of the year as well, as our guest, as Brian Basinger, the accountant, told us. Do these year-end things now.
NPR News starts right now.